Hello, and welcome to the Safety 2023 podcast, presented by IOSH and recorded live at the 23rd World Congress on Safety and Health at Work in Sydney, Australia. In this series, we'll give you exclusive access to interviews with experts from around the globe to cover some of the biggest challenges and trends in occupational health and safety. This is the Safety 2023 podcast, presented by IOSH. I'm Kelly Williams, and this is all going down live at the 23rd World Congress on Safety and Health at Work here in Sydney, Australia. Joining us next is an excellent guest from the beating heart of Australia. He's an experienced risk and safety consultant and founder and director of Outback Safety. A hearty welcome to Martin Hill.
Well, thank you very much.
Martin, you're in a very particular and peculiar space in the OSH community right now, being based in the Northern Territory. And I'm keen to dig into that. But your background's actually in the military, is that right? Can you tell us a bit about, more about that?
My background is in the military, but I suppose for your listeners, it's probably a good idea to explain where the Northern Territory, well, not just where the Northern Territory is, but actually where Darwin is.
Yeah.
So if you think of Australia, it's actually in the centre, but at the very, very top. The closest major city to us is Bali, opposed to Sydney, Melbourne, or any of the other ones.
Yeah.
So we are far away from everyone else. We basically have two seasons, which is wet and dry. So it's always hot all the time. So we're remote, we're really hot. And for those that actually can see the podcast at the moment, I rarely ever wear a suit in the fact that probably in Darwin, there's only two types of people that actually wear suits, is one when you're going to court or you're an undercover police officer who has come up from the East Coast. The locals don't actually wear suits.
Right. Well, you look very smart, Martin.
Oh, thank you. So my background is the military. I've mechanic by trade, so basically I end up becoming one of the more battle tank mechanics.
Right.
But with that, that's how I started moving into risk management and everything else, because things get a little different from time to time.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think it is about your military training that applies so well to OSH outside of the barracks?
I think it gives you a very good fundamental grounding of exactly what is required in a job. It makes you work as a team rather than a team of me. So it makes you focus on the single goal more so than just trying to fumble along without that. So it gave you very strict guidance, rules, and how to do it. But then it gave you the opportunity to work outside those realms just to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the biggest part, is the job has to get done regardless. So now how do we make it as safe as possible? How do we make it easy as possible, and so we can continue to do it, whereas it's not a matter of stop, can't do it anymore. Most people, most companies go, we want to do it, but how do we do it safely?
Yeah.
Not let's make it as safe as possible. And so I'm probably starting to move into more controversial areas to some other people around
it
here.
It actually leads me into my second question.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a risk and safety consultant now, and you founded Outback Safety. Can you give us a rundown about what you do?
Not a problem at all. So in regards to that, I found that a lot of businesses in the Northern Territory, I'll probably even say it's not just limited to them, is that they've got their company, they want to do it, but they don't know about the legislation. They don't know about the requirements and everything else. So that's where I came into it. So I started off doing working with local governments, then small, medium enterprises. Now I'm into large enterprises, working with the government. So, but with saying that, though, it's a very, very wide range. So if I limited it to becoming a super, super, super specialist, I'll probably have two clients and I'll be living in the poorhouse. Whereas I've had to adapt to make it going from one extreme to the other. I do road audits. I do inspections for the government on their construction projects. I also do work for those construction companies that are doing jobs for the government. I work with helicopters. I work with companies that have to deal with crocodiles. So it's very, very broad.
Really varied, yeah.
And it's not just city-based ones or small country towns. Sometimes it might be the location I'm going to is like a longitude and latitude grid references. So there's actually no name and no road that gets out there. It's like all dirt tracks.
Throw a little curveball in there then. What's been your favourite project that you've worked on?
Actually, there's a couple I can't actually talk about, which okay. are my favourites.
Fair enough.
But I probably have to say, in the sense of not what my favourite is, probably the best part about the job is that no one day is the same.
Yeah.
But the worst part about the job is no one day is the same.
Yeah, quite.
Some days I just want to put mind in neutral and just do the work, but other times can't do that. But then I do enjoy the variety of things that people throw at me.
I just want to hear more about the crocodiles, but we'll come back to that
okay.
a little bit later. Let's delve deeper into the unique setting, let's say, in which you work. So working in the Northern Territory, I mean, I guess even within Australia, it's a pretty unique setting. Can you share a story about something you've come across in the Northern Territory that you probably wouldn't see anywhere else in the Osh world?
Well, we're coming straight back to the crocodiles now, aren't we?
I did warn you.
So there was, well, it's been quite a few jobs, but one that actually brings to mind is that they were doing civil maintenance. So basically they're digging up a road in a floodway where they have to do construction of the actual floodway. They have to build it in such a way so that if the water, we get very high rainfall, doesn't actually wash the road away, so they've got to do certain things around there. However, part of their requirement is they've got to actually have a crocodile management plan. Most construction organisations that are doing civil works wouldn't even have to dream about actually thinking that while they're working, a crocodile might happen to walk through their work site.
Just picturing it now.
Now, probably the biggest thing to understand, especially with crocodiles, they're a very unique we'll call it character. It's up there with great white sharks and orcas. Now, the reason why I say that is because those three are the only, or they're the top three, we'll call them apex predators, in the sense that they will attack humans not out of fear, but because you're a walking hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
They will.
It's ingrained in them, isn't it?
That's right. Yep. They won't go, oh, they're going to hurt me. It's sort of, no, I'm hungry.
And I can.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the biggest thing, is that it's not going, hey, don't provoke it. It's sort of.
It's completely unpredictable.
That's
well, no,
right.
It's predictable, but not in the sense that you'd expect.
That's right. Yeah. So it's a matter of now, run.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, if part of your plan might actually be is, you got to have firearms.
That brings a whole new set of...
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So now, you know, to mitigate one risk, we're introducing a potentially bigger risk.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do we really manage those? So, you know, then, you know, if we want to manage that risk, do we bring in another risk? And, you know, so it just keeps snowballing onwards. So it's kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. But I'm saying that, though, we need the road fixed.
Yeah.
There's a very particular road roadway up by Jabiru in the Kakadu National Park. It's called Cahill's Crossing. So if anyone out there wants to Google that, watch it at high tide. You basically get about a metre of ocean water coming in and there's crocodiles all across the roadway. They shut the road down.
Wow.
And no one can cross it.
Wow.
So it's not a bridge. It's it's a roadway.
Yeah.
And so the road actually goes underwater. Preferably people shouldn't be driving through it.
Mm.
But there's crocodiles everywhere.
Amazing. I have to say, in 18 years of being a health and safety journalist, I have never, ever come across a crocodile risk management plan. That's a first for me.
Unfortunately, it's not for me.
So what's the general attitude to occupational safety and health in these high-risk workplaces?
This is probably where I'll start to get a little bit controversial in the fact that a lot of people find that the legislation is probably too prescriptive rather than adaptive.
Yeah.
And because of that, it probably stifles a bit of innovation because you're trying to comply with certain things rather than looking at something a little bit different, which may pull it out even bigger for you. So by making sure that we have to comply with legislation doesn't really allow us to step up and really don't like the word innovate. It's been thrown around too much.
I guess it's more about ownership, isn't it?
Yeah, to actually say we're owning the problem, we're coming up with new ideas, and you know what, this is actually a better idea than what's being prescribed to us.
Yeah, no, I get that. So have you seen a shift in the importance placed on it in, say, the decades that you've been working in this space?
Oh, definitely. Probably the biggest shift actually happened when I was actually in the military, whereas, you know, they started, you know, I'm not saying that the military didn't do occupational health and safety, but people started becoming more aware of it and going, oh, how come we were able to do it yesterday but we can't do it today? Suddenly realize, hang on, maybe we were probably, I shouldn't say breaking the law, but maybe we were bending the law a little more than we probably should have. Or, there was a shift around that. And then over time, and that was probably the very early 2000s.
Yeah.
And then, you know, for Australia, we had the harmonization of health and safety about 10 or so years ago. That started to really align things across Australia. But then everyone's going, oh, I just got the old laws right. Now you change them again on me and I just want to work.
Mm.
You know, just leave me alone. I want to work. Stop changing the rules on me. But then we're starting to realise that, you know, we do need certain rules, but they've got to be adaptive. So that's what we've found.
Yeah. So I'm curious about how well work health and safety legislation and policies serve these high-risk environments that you work around. Do you see a gap in legal requirements and the requirements for safety on the ground?
Once again, I'm going to say, yes, there is a gap. But that comes back to that whole, if it's all prescriptive, we're not looking at the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the funniest things I ever saw was, you know, people going, oh, I have to meet my quota of site inspections and everything else, and then walking around looking at cracks in the ground and everything else. So I purposely stand in front of them and they walk straight into you. They go, you didn't even see me. And you go, I think that's the bigger risk. They're too busy looking at the smaller, minute risk rather than looking at the bigger things that could probably, you know, hurt them even more. So I found that, you know, definitely the prescriptive versus the adaptive is probably the biggest gap. And there has been a bit of a change, not as fast as I'd like though, but there has been a change with the government in their legislation, but not as fast as I want.
Yeah. So you, speaking of government, you work with the government as an advisor on this type of specificity in OSH. What are the main challenges that are faced trying to give, I guess, profile and gain action for these particular needs?
I probably won't actually just limit it to the government. I reckon it's across everything.
Yeah.
In the fact that as safety professionals and those that are in those field, we can advise and guide, but we can't make them spend the money.
Mm.
And we will lay out what we believe is the best possible scenarios or the best outcomes we can give them, but it might only be priority number three on their list as opposed to priority number one. And we can't turn around and bang on and say, hey, look, you know, you need to spend all this money here. Going, hang on, but that's not our job. Our job is to give them options, A, B, C, D.
Mm-hmm.
And if they choose E, that's their choice.
Yeah.
And they've made their decision. But as an advisor and a guider, we just have to give it to them in the best way possible. I found, now this is also controversial in the sense, that if you can persuade them gently, I think most people call it manipulate them, into doing the right thing. Make them
aware of the consequences.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or even better, make them believe it's their idea.
Yes, very good.
So once they believe
it comes back to ownership again, doesn't it?
Most
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
So if suddenly your idea is their idea, you don't have to take ownership. You've done your job is by giving them the idea.
That works in parenting as well.
Yes, it does.
So what major changes have you seen in this space through your work?
In regards to legislation? And that sort of comes back to that. The biggest change for me was when I first joined the military, what is this health and safety thing?
Yeah.
And then over time, it was actually kind of used against us, as in some people, soldiers, would try and hide behind not doing their job behind it.
Right.
So then I, as a tradesman, they would separate and we'd end up doing all the work and they wouldn't because they're going, it's against health and safety, and we're all going, what's this health and safety thing? So it's that old chestnut being knowledge is power, but a little bit's dangerous. Man, I think we're bloody deadly back there.
Wow.
As in knowledge of it was very, very thing. But then I went off and researched all this concept of safety and risk and everything else, and then I was able to dictate to them that they have to do their work because we've met all those requirements. And then I understood that not only is knowledge is power, but you throw action on top of that, you can't beat it.
Absolutely. So if you come across a situation where requirements don't meet the needs of a work practice, just as you were speaking about, when it's literally a matter of life or death, how do you approach these situations?
Well, you kind of, this is where I suppose the old concept of risk management is, you've got to have your options available. Mm. You don't go in there going, I've only got one option, then it's not an option. So, when we go back to the old crocodile one, you've got to know five different escape routes rather than going, all right, everyone run over there. And you go, oh, actually, that's where the crocodile is.
Yeah.
So it kind of defeats the purpose. Mm-hmm. Where's everyone going to go then? So you've got to know, okay, climb up a tree, climb on top of a vehicle and just run really fast.
Mm.
Or it's just that type of thing of going, or if you've got weapons, where can I shoot and things like that. So it's more about you got to have options.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have options, well, that's exactly it. It's just a single prescriptive method that's going to get you killed.
So how do we shift the needle to see these practices being recognised in a more official and legal way?
That's a damn good question.
Well, thank you.
That's a very good question. It's a good question that deserves to be answered. Next question. No, I really don't have an answer for that one, purely because, if we shift it saying we allow this, it may allow some companies to go rogue. We don't want that, but it's almost, I don't know, maybe certain companies need to have an innovation license. So, so basically they can turn around and say we can look at safety differently, turn it on its head a bit and everything else. But if we go too prescriptive, work won't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that whole concept around safety differently, isn't there?
Mm.
And like you say, it's quite subjective, isn't it, depending on the environment or the industry. So just to finish on that, what kind of consultation needs to happen in this process and who does it need to involve if we were to go down that route?
That's another damn good question. Okay. Probably with that, though, it's first of all is it may be an actual case-by-case scenario, but it also has to be that and I found what companies want or industries or governments, what they want is not exactly what they need. And I've stopped asking those questions. I just have to ask, what's your end goal?
Mm.
What is it you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, that's a really good starting point, isn't it?
Because I found, nothing's more enjoyable than running enthusiastically in the wrong direction. mind you, I think I stole that quote from Keith Cunningham, but that's a different story.
So you're speaking at part of the From Crocodiles to Kitchens symposia this afternoon here at World Congress. I have to say, it's definitely one of the more eye-catching session titles on the schedule. What can you tell us what the session's going to cover?
So we've got myself up there and we've got Sky, who's going to be mediating. But we've also got Professor Graham Webb, who's probably one of the world's leading experts on crocodiles. So he's going to give his take on what it's like in collecting of crocodile eggs. So he's the crocodile expert and I was the risk expert, and we sort of tried to work together in that sense, because he was very sick and tired of the prescriptive type of thing. So I came in as the adaptive person. So we're going to try and give people an idea of, we shouldn't limit ourselves just to the prescription there. And I'm not saying go off and challenge legislation and the regulator. There's a good chance you'll probably lose. But it's actually about coming up with different ways of looking at the same problem. Mm. One example is that, and he will talk about this, is that, if you're walking, because he actually lands a helicopter into the swamp area, walks about 100 metres into the crocodile nest where there's a good chance there's a crocodile there. So if you look at risk management, it's always going to be there.
Yeah.
So always certain. And it's going to try and eat you. So death, no matter what happens, it's always in that corner there. So they're going, you got to wear PPE, you make sure you wear safety boots and things like that. And you're going, well, if you're walking in there barefoot, you can actually step on the tail, back out. You can't climb a tree in steel cap boots.
You can't.
So it's all about that. And we're going to be talking about the type of demeanour in there. So actually, I was going to mention about with the military, about the conditioning versus bullying. Mm-hmm. In that same type of environment, you're going to have people who may freak out. I mean, if you're going to walk into a crocodile infested area.
Well, it's quite likely.
What, you're going to meet a crocodile or freak out?
Freak out, both.
But we don't, that's the thing. We want the right type of person that's not going to freak out.
Yeah.
Because if you're
Don't put me in there then.
So if you're walking in there, you want to know that the person who's watching for the crocodile is actually still there looking for the crocodile.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not running 300 kilometres, running away from, so it's all about, because then straight away they put you in the precarious position and everything else. So you have to have that bonding there, and you may have a lot of colourful language thrown around if someone's not pulling their weight, because straight away someone's life's at risk. Everyone will go, well, why do you need to go collect crocodile eggs and things like that? Well, Graham's a scientist. He does a lot of research in this type of stuff. That's why he's one of the world's leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to get the, if your
materials to be able to do so,
and you have to get it in the wild. You can't, if you farm it, well, it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about those types of things.
Interesting. So what do you hope people will take away from it and apply in their own contexts?
Everything's unique, but it's not as unique as you think it is. So everyone likes to think their company's unique, the safety they do is very unique. It's not. It's very, you can transpose it into a lot of different areas. So it's for me, it's more about work out what you're going to do and then do it safely,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to doing what they think is right or the company thinks it's right. Just work out what the end goal is and work to that.
It's almost working backwards, isn't it?
It is,
Martin, I've loved hearing all about the things from the Outback in Oz, and I think the listeners will agree that it really does put another lens on Osh.
Thank you for having me.